NBA Draft GOAT Chad Ford, Locked On NBA Draft host Raphael Barlow, and Locked On NBA host John Krause will be live this year covering the NBA Draft. It's Locked On NBA Draft 2021, brought to you by Built Bar. Get local expert analysis on each pick. Follow Locked On NBA on YouTube today and watch live coverage on July 29th at 7 p.m. Speaking of the draft, buddy, that's what we're talking about today for the Brooklyn Nets. Hit us with the beats.
You know it, man. First, we kick it off with a little bit of perspective about how you go about building a team, where you put the hierarchy of positional value versus what you may want coming out of the draft. And then we dive in on a handful of prospects that Doug Norrie was watching tape on, from Isaiah Jackson to Dayron Sharpe, and of course, a little favorite perhaps in JT Thor. It's all coming up here as we set the table for Thursday night's NBA draft.
All right, we're going to get into it now, but first, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Nets podcast and the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. I'm Doug Norrie, owner-operator, DFSR.com. If you need some projections for FanDuel and DraftKings, head on over to DFSR.com. And that is Adam Armbrecht, the voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster, also the host of the One Giant podcast, where he and his boy Andy Mack are getting you ready for the New York Football Giants' upcoming season, which feels like it's only a day or two away. I know it's more than that, but it feels like it's closer. Buddy, how are we doing on almost the eve of the NBA draft?
I was going to say, only a day or two away from the NBA draft, and I was happy to give you that day off yesterday. I know you spent it kind of just on your own, meditative, right? Restoring the energies, refilling the reserves of energy to really bring it home for this NBA draft coverage.
Yeah, something like that. My wife went away for the night, and so it was me rocking. Some people call it, like, you know, dad duty. I'm like, hey, you're just a dad. Like, you don't, there's no dad duty. You're just a dad.
You were already a father before the night happened, right? You were supposed to be a part of the process.
I can't stand when I hear people say stuff like that. Like, oh, they're babysitting my kids, or I'm not dad duty. I'm like, I don't know, dude. You kind of like made, you had a kid. it feels like you were part of the process. Like, maybe you can just do the part two and not complain about it.
That being the case, we know that Doug is he's ramping and ready to go because he wasn't on dad duty. He was just being a father, as often he
is. I'm exhausted. I'm totally exhausted.
Right. Listen, it happens.
If you're just asking about it. Yeah. All right, let's talk a little NBA draft. Now, you know the people from the show know that I'm not the biggest college guy. I kind of like ramp into draft coverage stuff within the week. It helps that the Nets are good. So the draft pick over the last couple of years at least has not been all that great one. But we also know that the draft is a place where you can add value kind of no matter where you are on the on the spectrum, right? And good teams continue to get better in the draft sort of no matter what their draft slot is. Other teams like the Pelicans and the Thunder have like 25% of this year's drafts just like under their belt. So there's a couple different ways to do it. But how do you want to get us going here with the draft?
Yeah, well, so the first thing is, because there's a couple of points around what we've seen coming around as far as some mock drafts that have gone on, and you and I were talking last night even a little bit of, listen, a lot of this speculation around who's going to go where after you get out of the lottery picks and, you know, some of those more quantifiable players and you know what teams' needs are specifically, then it does become, hey, a lot of talented players, what do you need and who do you want to kind of take a look at? But the first thing I wanted to ask you was, I had gone over, as everyone knows, I went over Garuba yesterday. He's a guy that I think would be worth maybe packaging up some picks to trade up. But in general, for the Brooklyn Nets, my stance has been they need to be looking at adding a 4/5 and, you know, leaning into what has been kind of their identity. They play small ball. Now, I understand they went out and tried for LaMarcus Aldridge last year. It didn't work out. And it's maybe not for a lack of desire to be bigger. But when you look at just the NBA draft in general and what the Nets need to bring in, I say it's a little bit more length and defensive versatility. That seems like the, in my mind, the very obvious thing. And yet, whether it's saying that the Nets should be going for guards, a lot of mock drafts have them taking any variety of guards at the end of the first round, or the type of big that they say that they should be taking, depending on some of these mock drafts, have it kind of all over the spectrum. So, I mean, are you on the same page in terms of what you think the Brooklyn Nets should be looking to add at 27 or anywhere in the first round?
Well, no, because, okay, for a couple things. One, most guys you're going to get, I agree with you that is the Nets' core need at this point. They need size. Okay, so I'm totally with you on that part of it. I would maybe push back a little bit on the part where they need to get it through the draft, just because the draft, there's competing philosophies here that are probably at odds with each other, and this is one thing that's both maybe sometimes good about drafting this low, but then also tough with the Nets, is where the Nets' position is right now. You don't actually need to probably draft for need, because it's so unlikely that these guys will be on the same timeline as the three superstars in terms of being like NBA championship ready by the time you need them. So that would be the case for not drafting on need, just drafting best player available, because that's your best chance to have just like a real asset, whether it's a future asset, because that will be someone that you can kind of bring up over the next couple of years while these guys, you know, start their decline, or someone that you can make into a better player sooner and then kind of package them off, right? So like the case for not drafting the exactly for need is that, yeah, like what are the chances this guy is going to be ready to like play really meaningful, let's say playoff minutes, you know, when it matters. And the answer to that is it's probably low, right? So
when you see maybe like there's been Trey Mann or Zaire Williams, you know, guards that have been sometimes mocked to the Nets there at 27, you would then say, yeah, that's because that's best player available and the potential to have a valuable asset, as opposed to, do we need this right now? Eh, maybe not, because I always look at the guard position specifically, maybe to your point a little bit about, yes, you want to be in win now mode. And at least when I think about guards, I think it kind of goes across all positions. But the idea of, well, I need the backup piece. So we assume Spencer Dinwiddie is gone. Well, I'll go get a veteran guard to back these players up. And when you do that, then you know this player has the skill set and kind of the track record of being exactly what we need, right? When the Hawks go get Lou Williams, when teams go and get these little players to bring in to be the supporting cast members, it's easier to do that on players that have already been in the NBA as opposed to projecting what the skill set can turn into.
Total, 100%. And I would say almost every time, sport, position, everything, you should almost always just draft on talent, not need. Like I would say that it applies to basically every single thing, short of if you just drafted your franchise quarterback the year before and he looked good, you know, something like that. I think that's probably overstating a little bit, but for the most part, you should always just take talent over what you think your team needs in the moment, because that almost always means that you're taking a less talented player, and that never makes sense. I'll say one more thing about the guard thing too. If you look at mock drafts, it makes sense that a lot more guards would be mocked to the Nets in the spots where they are, like at 27, just because there's way more guards in the draft, right? So like there's the draft, at least like NBA ready guards, there's just way more of them than there are big wing / center types. And the big wing / center types, at this point in the NBA, you need to be so good to move up the draft board to be that guy, because your skill set is so limited that it makes sense to me from just like a numbers perspective why more guards would show up there. There's just more of them. Right. And so,
and if you think about, you know, the 27th pick, you're taking the, whatever, 11th best guard on the board. But from a value standpoint, he represents something like the 26th to 31st valued player, as opposed to there's a big there, but he's really 45th on the board. So how far back are you going to reach on doing the double down of need and also the talent that's available for you?
Right. So, like, when you see guys like Jaden Springer mock to them, or you see guys like the Sunmu mock to them, it's not. I know a Nets fan will say, rightfully, well, where are they going to play? You're behind James Harden and Kyrie Irving already, right? Especially like DeSumo, who's like more of an on-ball guy. I get why the instinct would be, well, where are these guys going to play? But then, you know, don't look back that far. Like, guys like Chioza and Mike James, those guys ended up getting minutes for the Nets last year, right? Like, right. It didn't take much. It doesn't take much for these guys to play. Mike James probably played way more than... I mean, Mike James was a late season ad, and he was playing a decent amount near the end. So it doesn't take much for some of these guys to play. So, I mean, I know we're going to kind of roll through some big men, and I think there's still places to draft based on need and talent that it seemed like, you know, you have some good names here that I'm excited at least about, I don't know, a couple of them. But I, in general, just from a high level, I think Nets fans shouldn't be turned off if on Thursday it's like, oh, they drafted a point guard. And you're like, well, we already have two of these guys. It's like, I don't know, man. Let's just pump the brakes. There's plenty of ways for that to work out. All right, we'll get to some of these more specific guys in a second. First, got to talk to you about our friends over at Rock Auto. Buying car parts these days, the makes, the models, there's so many. And the number of parts on your car, more than seven, folks. Less than 3,000, but more than seven. And sometimes it can be confusing, but not when you use Rock Auto. They have a drag and drop menu by make and model for your car, so it's really easy to find every single thing you need, and you can totally trust the prices, 30 or even 50% better than the local chains. And don't even compare it to the mechanics, because you know you're getting raked over there. Reliably low prices for every single customer, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpets. If you got those kids rolling around your car, you know how dirty they can get. New carpets there for you at Rock Auto. Right now, you go to rockauto.com. It's a family-owned business for over 20 years. You can see all the parts that are available for your car or truck, and all you have to do to help us out, write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box, and they'll know that we sent you amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
Okay, so the last note I'll just throw in quickly on that perspective on guards, I think, is you mentioned Mike James, you think about Tyler Johnson, you think about Chioza. Now, there's a spectrum in terms of the success that they had on the court, but that's kind of my case for there is a lot of talent at these positions. There is a lot of veteran talent, and I don't think it's impossible to go out and find a guy like that on the market without maybe having to spend a draft pick on him. And to that point, the other side is, and where we agree, the Nets' size, length, defensive upside. That's what you want to see them pursuing. Inside of mock drafts, again, some of the issue that I take with the way the high-level perspective is. So we're going to cover a few different guys here. I talked about Garuba yesterday, and I'll just... The spectrum that we're getting into is basically the skill set, right? And where they are in terms of being, quote, NBA ready. But the problem that I have with one of these players that we will cover is the skill set seems to be, and a lot of mocks talk about a need being, and this player has been mocked up. We'll start here to get rid of him. Da'Ron Sharpe.
Yeah.
This guy is, and there's things to like about his skill set. He has pretty good passing for a big man, etc. He doesn't really have a perimeter shot. He kind of sounds like, hey, do you want to replace DeAndre Jordan? Here's a guy that's going to be a good paint defender, rim protector, rebounder, can run the floor decently. When I hear pundits, I'll call them, mocking a guy like this to the Nets, it just feels counterintuitive when you just watched a playoff run where DeAndre Jordan couldn't sniff the court. Like, at the very least, it feels like you can refine the type of player that the Nets need, and this seems to be not only against what the Nets do, but also against where the NBA is going of having bigs that are versatile. So some of these bigs that kind of represent the traditional look, you know, Da'Ron Sharpe is a thick guy, thick body, good to have some muscle, but he also lacks a lot of the skill sets that you want to have complementing a roster like this.
Yeah, Da'Ron Sharpe is a center from North Carolina. He's 6'11", 265. My first note on him was he's a load. like he's
technical term.
Massive. Yeah. So watch tape on him over the last couple days. He, NBA body-wise, like he could get in there and be very physical from day one. That's good. You can't say that about every one of these bigs. So that's a good thing. I'm going to start with a good for Da'Ron Sharpe. Like he could step in tomorrow and not get hurt. and be able to play some minutes without you having to compromise too much physicality, which is, again, in the draft, that's actually not that easy to come by, right? So, like, having, like, a filled-out body already where you don't need to wait, like, you know, Giannis for, or Nick Claxton, where you have to wait, like, 5 years for them to put on 30 pounds or something like that. Like, he's, again, he's there already. He's huge. So that's the good part. The bad part is, and I'm going to go through some of this stuff kind of quickly because I have more notes on this than I'm just going to say, but he's fine in transition. The hustle is definitely there for sure. Where I would really worry about his like ability to play at least soon is his default mode is running to the post for traditional post-up sets. Now, I don't know. I don't watch a lot. I'm just going to tell everyone now. I don't watch a lot of college basketball. So if I'm wrong about this, you can just at me. I've been very, very vocal about this. I do not watch college basketball. There could be that North Carolina runs their system on a post-heavy set where that is the that's like the operating mode. But really, when you watch him get into the, when you watch him play offense, there's no pick and roll, there's no high set stuff. It's like run to the post and put your arm up for like a traditional post up, and right. That just has no place in the NBA. Like that is just not something that you want to do, really, with even the best guys. And if that's your default mode, there'll be some training around that. And if that's your whole offensive game, then you're pretty limited. So that was my concern with Darren Sharpe. It's like, yeah, NBA body probably ready, at least to start from a physicality piece. I'd be really concerned about what you'd ever be able to get out of offense without significant training over like many years of like how his game works. And maybe he just has the instincts, but it didn't really show to me on the tape.
No, and that's the thing about, yeah, 100%. Like you mentioned the thickness, the load that is Sharp, and that's great, but all the other little attributes make it hard for me to project to say, and for example, you mentioned Nick Claxton, it's like you have to think about who's either going to be in a rotation replacing Claxton on the floor at times, or what if these guys are on the court together for stretches? Now you're bringing on a guy who can rebound, sure, but has no perimeter shot in his game. Nicholas Claxton, we think, at least had the potential to be able to do that, but he hasn't showcased that at all over the last 2 years either. So there's you know, also a clear balance of what is this guy's skill set going to be and how does it complement what we currently have on our roster. So he's a hard one for me to get my head around, even though that's a player that at 27 definitely is going to fit right into the pick wheelhouse for the Brooklyn Nets. When I talked about Garuba yesterday and now this player, because I want to save your, I think who you consider to be your favorite out of this list that we're going through. When I looked at Garuba and now Isaiah Jackson out of Kentucky, these are both guys that you theoretically might need to package up some picks and move up the board to make sure you get. Before we go into Isaiah Jackson and his game, are you comfortable doing that? Like, does that make sense? Like, for these guys specifically, now that we're talking about them, any of... whether it's Isaiah Jackson, if it's a Garuba, if it's going to be JT Thor, who we're going to get to last on this list, is it worth it to say, here's 2 second-round picks plus 27 to move up X number of spots to get one of these guys? Or to loop back to that first perspective, it's the draft. They take time to develop. There's not a lot of NBA-ready guys. How much do you want to sacrifice for that in the draft class, knowing that second-round picks can kind of be the Reggie Perrys, right? Nice pick. We'll see what happens with him.
I think the Nets are in a position where you probably just take your chances on whoever is left there. This draft does seem deep enough that I'm not sure, unless you had your absolute sights set on one of these, you know, mid-teens guys, and it doesn't seem like the Nets are in that mode here. I would just assume... say I would not move up for any of the guys we've mentioned before. I wouldn't move up for Thor either, and I really like him, but to bury the lead. But I wouldn't move up for him either. I don't think. I think it's just by comparison. By the way, we're using these guys because we're looking at different mock drafts around finding. We're not just picking these guys off the wall. Adam, you know, is targeting guys that. Right, like you targeted guys that are just falling in this range more than anything else, correct? Like, I know we're talking more about big guys here more than anything else because of what the Nets need is, but Adam's clearly the guy who, like, is more of the draft guy between the two of us. You're targeting guys, like, more in the range more than anything else, correct?
Yeah, listen, when we talk about, you know, again, a guy like Garuba, he's someone, and by the way, go listen to the mock draft, the ultimate mock draft on this network. This is the way it fell for me when I went through the mock draft. Garuba fell at 27 for us. So it's, you know, he's a guy that plays internationally for Real Madrid and has professional experience, but to your point about guard play, that seems to take over priority a lot of times in drafts, so players start to fall. So, you know, plenty of these drafts, in spite of the fact that Garuba is listed 14th overall on ESPN's board and Isaiah Jackson is 19. Okay, that's all relative. You start to look through the mock drafts and see that 7 out of 10 times, they fall down to the mid and late 20s. That means that it's at least an achievable goal for the Nets to look at some of these guys. And Isaiah Jackson, I think, is one of those players that falls into this range because he has the natural skill set but still needs time to develop. So we'll get into him in a second. But yes, overall, the idea is, how do you look at this draft? How do you look at mocks and say, yes, these guys are possible to get to this place here, understanding that other team needs around you are going to be looking at guard heavy, or even when you talk about not looking for a guy at the three, right? The Nets can look past that player unless it is a skill set that just naturally fits in for them. And the interesting thing is, too, when you roll through the back end of the first round and get into the second round, for the most part, When you look at the hierarchy of the board here, you're going through out of the back 10 of the first round, 8 of them are playing at the guard position. When you get into the second round, 4 out of the first 5 are at the guard position. And that's where JT Thor and De'Ron Sharpe start to come in. A guy we're not going to get to in Charles Basie is there at 35. Like, but the bigs and some of the length and some of the size does start to get pushed down the board a little bit, which could benefit the Nets ultimately if they're just going to stand pat at 27 and say, hey, when we get there, we'll see what's available, and probably not unlike last season, right? If we don't end up seeing the guy that we absolutely want, or there's an opportunity to package something and trade and bring in a player to help fill out our roster, we can make that move on the fly. And it, when you're this good, or when you're one of the good teams, and the Nets aren't the only one, I think you said at the top, it affords you the ability to say, ah, what do we think here? And you don't have to feel, there's no pressure for the Nets to feel like we need to achieve something in the first round in order to feel like we're going to be successful this year.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I just don't think that you can reach a little bit, but I also get why. And some, like I said, like the draft boards are sometimes all over the place. I've seen at Jackson go, like Jackson goes higher than the other two, probably. But like yes, Garuba, yeah. I just saw one where Garuba falls to 31st, right? I think mm-hmm. This is just, there's a little bit of a dartboard aspect around where probably after the top 10 go. And I think even the top 10 has some experts confused about where, like, what some of the order is going to be. All right, we'll get into Jackson and Thor here in a second. First, let's talk about our friends over at Bet Online. The very best place to put in all of your betting sports action. We've been talking about the draft. Oh my gosh. Go and look at the options over at Bet Online right now about what you can kind of grab in terms of the NBA draft. We just talked about Isaiah Jackson. They have over under 18.5 for the overall pick. You're going to need to pay -140 on the over 18.5. That's just one. They have just about every single top guy in the top 20 over at Bet Online that you can get, grab some of the action. You can also package some stuff together. Like, you can package one of these players and be the 5th overall draft pick, the 6th overall draft pick. It's all there for you at Bet Online. So many different options. Go over there right now. You make a free account, but you're going to want to make a deposit. And when you do, make sure you use the promo code Locked On, and you're going to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Promo code Locked On, 50% welcome bonus. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
Okay, so you mentioned him there as far as some of the betting odds. He's sitting around maybe around 18 or so, could be an option for you. But also, comparatively, just from a NBA ready body, Isaiah Jackson, relative to, say, a De'Ron Sharpe, the thing about Isaiah Jackson is he doesn't have an NBA ready body. This guy is, as they say, rail thin. He's maybe in the Kevin Durant model of in terms of physical presence. He's 6'11". He has a 9'5 standing reach, but comes in at just 206 pounds. The big thing in all these prospects really is that we're thinking defensive, value and upside first. Isaiah Jackson is the most athletic, the most versatile, and the most fluid on the defensive end, I think, out of the guys that we're discussing. He doesn't have the offensive game. That's a work in progress. But if you think about a guy that's going to be able to switch from either side of the paint, he's going to be able to get over on coverage, he's going to be able to protect the rim, you know, in the same type of style, I'll say, as Nicholas Claxton, just being a smaller frame. This guy is probably, to me, the biggest, we're taking you for 3 years from now kind of player. because of what his frame is going to need to build out with. I think you'll still see him get some sniffs on the court, but I wouldn't be shocked if he kind of got the Nicholas Claxton treatment, a slow and steady come along. And as you see the body develop, you see his opportunities develop. And the question would be, can you live with a timetable like that if you're taking him even at 27? But I mean, this guy would be the great, hey, when it's all said and done and we've won our championships, Isaiah Jackson could be a centerpiece for what you do going forward 3 or 4 or 5 years from now.
Yeah, it's the 3 or 4 or 5 years from now piece. That's the key. So he's 6'10", 206. Don't need to do the math on that if you haven't seen what he looks like. He's rail thin. He's from Kentucky. It's clear why the Claxton comp from not just us, other people too, is a good one. He's just very, very skinny. He's super athletic. He can probably play switch heavy defense now around the perimeter, which is good. He's decent rolling to the rim. He's got great hustle. And his weak side defense is really good. So there's a lot of stuff to really like from it. And a lot of that stuff, like a lot of those things that I just mentioned are pure athleticism things, right? Like it's like if you're in college and super athletic and have a motor, which he definitely does, then that stuff, it's easy to kind of look good at that stuff if you're just really hustling, if that makes sense. It's not a knock on him. He's definitely good. It's just that definitely in that level, if you just outwork a lot of people, you can look really, really good at that other stuff. Does that make sense? And like it can mask the part where your body isn't filled out enough. I'm actually shocked that he's this high in some of these boards after watching him. I just don't see the NBA piece really being anywhere close to ready. And as far as I could tell, the offensive game really wasn't there at all. And I just don't know. Like if you look around the league, how many guys like this are just getting meaningful minutes for teams? That's my concern, right? Like it's just like it's not that it can't happen at some point. It's just if you look around the league and you think, okay, how many 6'10 rail thin guys that can't play around the perimeter are playing tons of NBA minutes right now? And the answer is like none. And I think from that standpoint, I'd be really concerned about him. And I want to get into Thor here in a second, but I'd be concerned about Jackson from that standpoint. Does that make sense? Like I would have put him lower than I'm probably not sharp. I'm just surprised he's this high on the board.
Yeah, I mean, and this is the piece where I think if he, quote, falls to the Nets or falls to the back end of the first round, a team feels like you're getting value based on what the talent level could be. But the only, I think the risk reward on guys like this in general is when they say, when you say the athleticism piece, okay, but again, you got to fill out the frame first. And then once you fill out the frame, how does it look? His footwork is strong enough. They say that, he can take on adding some weight and then still have the value in the skill set and not have it be diminished by carrying more muscle on his body. But to your point, so often they talk about NBA teams want young talent. Right. You want a guy that's 18, just, 18, 19 years old, so that in a couple of years when he's ready, you haven't lost some of the length of what you're going to get out of a player in terms of his years in the NBA. But there has to be a balance there about NBA ready versus eventually ready, because a 19-year-old that isn't going to be ready until he's 23 may not be as valuable as a 22-year-old with a limited upside, but that is going to be able to play for you. And that always ends up coming down to, again, teams that are competing for championships right now versus teams that are trying to build, right? The Detroit Pistons might love to get their hands on a guy like this because they're in that process of putting their pieces together and trying to build from the ground up. The Nets are trying to win right now. And this guy, to me, he seems even further off in terms of being ready to go than even Nicholas Claxton was, maybe, who came on pretty strong. So that being the case, though, I want to give you as much runway on JT Thor, because he at least falls into the same type of mold from a size and weight standpoint, but physically he looks different on the floor, I think, than the way that Isaiah Jackson does, at least on tape.
All right, so Adam sent me three names to look at, so I'm just gonna tell everyone this right now. Like Adam's the engine that's driving the NBA draft coverage for us all. Like he's the one that sent the three names. And he's like, let's talk about these three guys tomorrow. And that's kind of how, those were my marching orders, right? Adam's steering the ship. So when I looked at these three guys,
very strict.
Well, I couldn't believe Thor. Okay. So JT Thor, He's like 6'10", 6'11". He's small, too. He's on the 205 range in terms of weight. Also, went to Auburn freshman. The difference with him is he actually plays, he has a perimeter game that these other guys don't. And he's a lefty, so, you know, it always stands out a little bit if you're a lefty, not for better or for worse, but you kind of just, I don't know, you perk up a little bit, and James Harden, and, you know, just kind of take a look, extra little look when you see the guy chucking up threes as a lefty. Yeah, I was thinking that was the other comp I was going to get to. You didn't give me time. There's a very different part of his game. His offensive game is much more polished than these. I mean, it's not even close. They're not comparable. His game is not necessarily NBA ready right now, but it's actually pretty close, I think, in terms of offense.
Yeah, all these guys.
The defenses, I'll get to the defense in a second, but the offensive piece, he can shoot from beyond the arc. He actually shot almost 3 3-pointers a game. Only shot about 30%. I don't take that too much from percentage from college. Sometimes look more at the free throw. He's like shot almost 75% at the free throw line. That's a very good sign for his ability to just a repeatable process around the shot. So that's a really good sign. The offensive game is he has great instincts about where to be, at least on the court, and then sort of how to kind of put himself in position for a good shot. Has no problem pulling the trigger in terms of when he gets the ball and wants to put up a shot. I actually think that's part of the problem with some of his percentages is that sometimes he just took bad shots. Like his bad shot taking was
never saw a bad look,
part
right?
of his no yeah he just well, what did you think about Thor? Because I have another comment that I'm going to make about him, but I wanted to stay on the positive side first. But when you saw him, like, how did you see him compared to these other guys?
Yeah, I really liked, to me, it's the fluidity that he plays with, because as you get into these lengthier players, Isaiah Jackson, or, I mean, and De'Ron Sharpe, it's hard to lump these guys together given the 60-pound disparity between them, but his fluidity on both ends of the floor, so he was able to pick up on switches defensively, go in for a steal. I mean, again, I don't want to just do this comp just on the Nets, but just picture when Nicholas Claxton was able to reach in for steals against a couple of guards. That's something that JT Thor showed the ability to do on the defensive end. And then when he got the ball out on the break, he runs the court as fluid as Kevin Durant does. So I think that, and you mentioned it about the free throw percentage and the perimeter game, the big difference for JT Thor to these other guys is the defensive upside, or not even upside, the defensive baseline may not be as high as maybe a Garuba I talked about, or the natural starting point you think you have with a Jackson or even a De'Ron Sharpe, but the balance on both ends of the floor. JT Thor probably represents the most balanced player out of these three names we talked about today, and that's not insignificant for the Nets, because you saw the way Nicholas Claxton could get lost in the shuffle on the offensive end and not really have a clear role outside of crashing the boards and running the open court. So that really was, for me, at 6'10", again, you're going to have to add muscle, but the fact that he could get out and move on the open floor, it stood out. And like you said, the willingness to shoot also gives you an indication that if you refine his shot selection a little bit, you would like to think those percentages can also go up from that standpoint too.
Yeah, I'm with you on all that part. The athleticism's there. I think you said, he has the fluidity to his game. My concern with him is that if you watch him play, and if you watch like extended like reels of him, my first note was, how were his numbers not better at Auburn? Like, how
right?
Like, how was it? Because there's really, what happens is, You look at like sort of the fluidity around the shot. There's a little bit of a hitch, but like whatever, that could probably be corrected. He has a really pretty high release, so you like that for how big he is. And in terms of how willing he was to shoot the ball at times, you're like, well, how did he only get 7 shots per game and score like less than 10 points a game? And the reason, if you read more about him, is that because he just has a tendency to like just disappear during the game, and that's not a great sign. And so that's where I think he starts to drop, is that his basketball, I think his, not to say his drive, I actually think that his basketball IQ is probably lower than you want it to be right now. And that's where you get like, oh, he's a raw prospect or whatever. Because when that's the case, it's actually harder for you to find your place on the court. It's harder for you to put yourself in the right position. It's harder for you to know where it is to demand the ball in a good spot. And then you can actually become really, really disengaged really fast. And I think, because if you watch his highlights, they make no sense when you actually look at his stat line for the season. Like, it just doesn't, doesn't line up. It doesn't line up at all based on when it's good. It looked as good as, you know, not as good as can be, but it looked really, really good when it was good. The problem was it just isn't good. It wasn't good enough for consistent enough stretches to be able to put it all together. And maybe it would. Like, he's a freshman. He's pretty young. He's, you know, he's an Alaskan kid. I don't know what kind of competition he played, you know, before his freshman year at Auburn. So there's lots of things that can explain stuff like this. But in general, there was a disconnect for me when watching his tape and then looking at his overall line. I mean, the only thing that made sense to me was the free throw percentage based on his shot. I was like, okay, that makes sense. Right. Like, that was like, that makes sense to me, because I'd be shocked if this kind of shot was shot poorly at the line, which it didn't. Everything else about it was very hard for me to wrap my mind around, because I'm like, man, these reels are just great, and it just didn't happen consistently enough. I'm among that. I think I'm still fine with that, because you can just be young and just not have a total clue yet, and you can just learn that stuff. And that would not be something that would turn me off at all, because all the other stuff for me looks like this is like a guy that they said this name. And there's a chance that he could fall to like their second pick overall. This would be a name that I think we'd be happy to see kind of stepping into a Nets uniform.
Yeah, and you talk about these three players, and it's from anywhere from basically 18 to 35 as far as where these three players, Isaiah Jackson, Dayron Sharpe, and of course JT Thor, could go. So that, you know, you're talking about maybe a talent that falls, and then also a couple of guys right in the wheelhouse, and that's what happens, right? You like a lot of things on tape, but then it's the motor piece. You like what he does defensively, but what about the offensive development? The guy has great skills, but he just isn't big enough, or he's a thick body, but maybe too much of the old guard of NBA style center. So this is where you are when you're at the back end of the first round. I do still think that there's, you know, the ability for the Nets to get a really good player here. The question will become, how soon do you think you make an impact? And I'll leave it to Doug. Another assignment. Now go compare to Usman Garuba, because that, everybody knows, that's Adam's sweet baby selection that he wants. I would move up the board to get him if that was the case, simply for what he brings on the defensive end. But we'll get into that maybe on the next episode. They call that a tease in the business.
Adam nearly passed out when he got Garuba in the mock draft for the NBA, for the Lockdown NBA.
I got text messages, man. I was like, I'm crushing
text
it.
Messages. It went up in the NBA group chat. It was a whole thing. It was doing cartwheels, the proverbial internet cartwheels when he got Garuba in the fake draft. All right, we're going to get out of here. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more NBA draft stuff. In the meantime, make sure you rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. Like and subscribe helps those numbers continue on during the off season. Like and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
And of course, friends, we have to let you know that the Locked On Mock Draft is still available for you to dip your ears in on. You can listen to it. It's presented by Locked On and Odyssey, featuring analysis from the GOAT of NBA mock drafts, Chad Ford, who was very complimentary about my selection, and Odyssey NBA experts Brian Scalabrine and former general manager Ryan McDonough. It's the perfect way to get ready for the NBA draft. Our Locked On local experts, that's me, are making selections and trades for your favorite team. That's the Brooklyn Nets throughout the week-long special event that is wrapped up. It's concluded, and you can hear all of it searching the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. Odyssey is your home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matters to you. That's AUDACY Odyssey. I don't even know if I really have a quote, man. Let's just, you know, get a good player, I guess.
Adam Arbuck, one of the all-time great poets. All right, we'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.